I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is Jamaica's High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, Ms. Cheryl K. Spencer. She is also accredited to other countries in Southern African region as well as those of East Africa, 19 countries in total, which is an enormous responsibility. She is a career diplomat with 26 years in the Jamaican Foreign Service and has a wide-ranging experience in international relations and diplomacy at the bilateral, regional, and multilateral levels. Before her appointment as High Commissioner to South Africa, Ms. Spencer was the Senior Director for the Foreign Trade Department in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade, with responsibility for trade policy, trade-related issues, and technical leadership and coordination of Jamaica's positions in trade negotiations. Welcome to the show, High Commissioner.
It is indeed a pleasure. It has been long in coming. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And this is, I believe, your second year in South Africa.
Yes. In January, it will be 2 years since I am in South Africa, yes.
You've had a tremendous amount of experience, 26 years. You've held various positions. Can you share with us a few of the landmarks in your career?
The first one, I think, that was very, I've never forgotten, was being chosen to go to Brussels. And that was exactly 3 years after I joined the Jamaican Foreign Service. And Brussels is a very key post. It is the center of Europe, and it is Europe, as you know, after USA and Canada, was the area that we paid more attention to. So that was a very big thing for a very junior officer in the ministry. And just after arriving in Brussels, I was also handed the chairmanship of the Sugar Working Group. And if anyone knows Jamaica, they would understand the history and the role of sugar in that country. So it was a very big deal.
Can you give us a little bit of context on that?
In fact, what happened was that my colleague from, it was the Caribbean Stern, my colleague from Trinidad and Tobago finished his tour of duty. And he just took one look at me and decided, well, you have to take it. So even though I was just settling in, I had to take it. I believed that it at the beginning it was very difficult, but I had a very good ambassador, and I just decided to take the plunge. Sugar was not a very easy subject at the time, I must warn you, but I think I managed to weather it. Yes.
And from then?
Thereafter, I went to Trinidad and Tobago after Brussels. I was the Deputy High Commissioner there. That was a whole new ball game. And I also, not only was I dealing with the bilaterals of all the countries in the region, as it's the only mission we have in the Caribbean, but we also have a number of students. You may know about the University of the West Indies. We have three campuses, the Mona campus in Kingston, the St. Augustine campus in Trinidad and Tobago, and we have Bridgetown, the Barbados campus. And because of that, people move around in the region because it's a regional university. And so we had a large number of Jamaican students in Trinidad and Tobago, and that became a very, very big part of my portfolio. Just even as we turn to Christmas, this is an experience where I took it upon myself to organize students, get them into homes, those who were not able to travel home, and then to organize big Christmas dinners for these students. And I remember running into, sitting in a mall one day having lunch, and a gentleman came up to me, by this time very tall and very imposing, and said, "Is that you, Miss Spencer? Do you remember me? It is Steve. You used to feed me in Trinidad and Tobago." So that was quite a very big thing. I've never forgotten that, because I think it was a very good investment in
true,
the students.
And it just demonstrates how much you've been able to touch people.
I was
and the contribution.
Very stunned that he was able to recognize me, but two, that he remembered that this was something that I had done. So it was very good. And then I was assigned to as deputy head of mission in Geneva. And again, a little after I arrived there, Jamaica was handed the chairmanship of the African, Caribbean and Pacific Group, the coordination of that. And we were knee-deep in the Doha round of negotiations. And it meant that as a deputy, I was charged with the technical leadership and strategic leadership of the group. And this not only meant working and getting positions together among my colleagues, but also selling it to the ambassadors. So I felt that that was also a milestone that really I celebrate. And I think I did that for over 2 years. And I think it went very well. And finally, just before I came here to South Africa, I was the senior director for trade, because having done trade in Brussels and then spent so many years, 6 years in Geneva, and developing and training, I developed a certain level of expertise in trade. And so I assumed the role of the head of trade in Kingston, which is half of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade. And that meant now that I was cultivating the political side, my own local political directorate, as well as the leadership of the region. So it meant that from time to time I had to be in the heads of government, letting them know selling certain positions and strategies on how we are to operate with trade.
Well, it's a very diverse array of positions to have held.
Yes, I really feel that I had done the gamut. So bilateral, multilateral, I have covered it, yes.
And now that you're in South Africa, and now that you're looking after 19 countries in the continent,
yes,
what milestones do you want to achieve or within your career during this term?
Yes. As I was mentioning to you, as we were talking about when people go to Jamaica and the surprise that it is, I want to continue to bring that surprise to South Africa of the misconceptions, the misunderstandings about Jamaica. I'm trying to debunk that. I'm trying to make sure that there's a greater awareness of our history, the history and connection between Jamaica and Africa in general, and also the history and connection between Jamaica and South Africa, bringing that awareness of Jamaica as a country with rich traditions, with a strong, resilient population, controlling its destiny, leading its destiny. So that's something that I'm actively working on at the moment, and I'm really working with a number of organizations here in South Africa to get that done. The other one, which is key to me, is expanding trade relations. I want to see more of Jamaican goods in South Africa, but not anything in competition with South African goods, but goods that I know South Africans would like. For example, our jerk. I noticed that South Africans eat quite a bit of meat. There's no way we should not have jerk on this market.
And when you said jerk in South African context, that's biltong.
No, actually, it's a sauce. It's a marinade that you use to put on your meats. It has a very nice smoky flavor, very spicy. We have from mild to spicy, and that gives you your meat a flavor and a tenderness that you probably wouldn't.
So
have
that's the
before.
Taste of Jamaica.
It's the taste of Jamaica. That's it.
And apart from the products, in terms of these tangible items, I would also argue that there's the export in terms of the sporting nature. I mean, from a South African point of view, Wade Manikirk was training with Hussein Bolt, who I think must be one of the most famous sportsmen athletes in the world.
Yes, we are really proud of Usain Bolt. And as I was explaining to you earlier, it was he who really decided for us that Jamaica was going to utilize the gift and bring a better awareness of that gift which we have. It is something that predated Usain Bolt, but it is he who has amassed that for us. And he's the one who determined that he was not going to leave the country to train anywhere else in the world. And therefore, our coaches decided that, well, we will use our competitive advantage and begin to train. And so I have attracted more people to Jamaica. And also, we have a sports and recreation agreement with South Africa, and that is something that we are already working on, and we are hoping that within that we'll incorporate issues like the youth, how to utilize the sports aspect of Jamaica, because most of these are youths after all, the Usain Bolts and so on, how to share the impact on the youth, making sport a money-making venture for the youth. So we are working on that as well. There's culture. We have a cultural agreement as well with South Africa. And that is something that now is bigger. I really want us to explore the complementarities between both countries. Both are gifted. I have been in South Africa for 2 years and I have really just marveled at the similarities and the complementarities between both countries. So I really want to be able to do that as well.
When you've got those similarities, it often makes the hard work a little bit easier.
Yes, yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we're a gender-based show, one of the areas that I think is important, that being a female High Commissioner into Africa sometimes touches on sensitive points, be it culture, religion, tradition. Yes. And you've had experience in different areas around the world. Do you think that women ambassadors or High Commissioners face different challenges to their male counterparts?
It is true that the gender stereotyping, cultural norms, other factors affect us as women ambassadors, and diplomatic life has always been seen as a man's purview. It is still a man's purview. I believe the brotherhood of men usually can be intimidating as women ambassadors, and because there's a natural affinity when you notice how they operate and thing. When the toughness and the courage and the strength that are usually seen as male attributes, people don't want to see that in women,
no, they don't.
Which are key for women ambassadors. And so that is something that will always be there. But I think my view is that women have been excelling and are excelling in rare fields and are doing quite well. Areas that were never previously thought to be able to be accessible to for women. Many are now involved in international relations and diplomacy. And so the assumptions are playing less and less of a role, I think, and gives the confidence to any woman that they can progress. I think for me, I've had several Jamaican women ambassadors. I follow many of them. From a mentorship perspective, and also who have done very well when you go to posts like the UN in Geneva or New York, Brussels, and you as a woman are able to manage and be successful in those posts, those are hard. Those are acts that you follow and know that you can make it as a woman ambassador. And that is something that I follow, that there are many Jamaican women ambassadors who have done this. And I have been mentored, as you say, by many of them. And the important thing is not my womanness. It is establishing my credibility. It is my intellect. It is my capacity for my job, my training that has been passed on by so many others before me. So it's making me no different from the male as far as I'm concerned. And when I enter a room, I don't worry about being a woman. I enter the stream and begin to operate.
And that's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be.
Competency,
yes,
is actually all that matters.
It's all that matters.
And what is your opinion on the strengths and limitations of gender equality in Africa, given this broad gambit of countries that you look after?
The strengths, I think, start with the fact that education is, and access to education is changing. I believe that since 2008, the World Bank has indicated that at the primary level, 91 girls of all for every 100 boys are in primary schools across Africa. And targeting of the youth, meeting young girls in their adolescent stage, I notice there is some amount of emphasis on that. I think that is very good because that's the place at which you begin to teach them how to be productive women. And the important work of the African Union, I think, on gender equality, I think that is something that is also a part of the strengths here. And women themselves, who I know are driving their destiny here in Africa, successfully promoting agreements that advance the rights of women. I think those are great strengths at the moment. The limitations, I see them as the recognition or lack thereof of the role of women in development, I think, and the economy. Many women are doing extraordinary things, driving innovation, building in agriculture and so on, and they are not really recognized. I think the issue of female unemployment is a problem and continues to be a problem, and labor force participation is always very critical for gender equity, and the whole issue of the difference in income and capacity, earning ability is also one of the limitations. And finally, advocacy. We need a bit more. We need a bit more. We need to hear more voices. That's it.
You know, I think those are all incredibly valid points. Mm. And I'm often very frustrated when we look at it from a point of view of income disparity, where despite doing the same position, there is still this, I think the average is that women earn 23% less than their male counterparts.
Despite
doing the same
role. Despite doing the same role. And there are concerns that sometimes there are people who do it for lip service. You give the role, but you don't allow the woman to be able to increase herself, advance herself within the process, and that is something that we need to deal with.
Yes, and I don't think anyone wants window dressing.
No,
in those positions to
even if you're getting a good salary, I don't think that's appropriate. Yes.
And whilst we're on the topic of almost leadership, what is your opinion in terms of female leadership? Whether that's in the parliamentary space, business, in the foreign affairs environment.
Yes. I think progress is still a bit slow in some countries, but things are changing in terms of female leadership. I think building capacity starts with education again, and a higher percentage of women, I think, are now being enrolled in universities. In Jamaica, for example, females are leading in terms of enrollment in various levels of education. Between 56% and 70%, and the data on performance in schools also show females receiving higher quality education and grades than their counterparts. So I think significant strides have been made across all areas. I think in business, companies are now realizing the benefits of having female leadership and are implementing policies to be able to utilize more of that.
It's interesting, there's definitely a trend across the globe, hearing the figures that you're quoting, both from a South African point of view and other countries, that there are more women in education, getting those higher qualifications.
Yes.
It's like they have armed themselves with what they need in order to advance.
And believe me, it is the way to go. Otherwise, you will not be able to make that progress. You can't be speaking up for equity if you're not there.
No,
it's
self-empowerment.
It's self-empowerment.
Today, we're talking to the Jamaica High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, Ms. Cheryl K. Spencer.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Takataka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 802. Today, we're talking to the Jamaican High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, Ms. Cheryl K. Spencer. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment of the conversation, Ms. Spencer relayed some of her early history going through from positions in Brussels to Trinidad, Tobago, Geneva, and more recently into South Africa. We also spoke about some of her contributions that she intends to make with her term in this current post, debunking myths and misconceptions of Jamaica, pushing through on expanding trade relations, looking at activities between our sporting entities to give youth more opportunity, as well as cultural blends. High Commissioner, the latest stats from the Interparliamentary Union regarding female representation in parliaments shows that leading countries like the USA are in 96th position, UK 48th, France 60th. Whilst in Africa, we have got Rwanda leading the way at first position, Senegal makes sixth position, and South Africa is ranked seventh. When I look at this data, the one question that comes to mind is that low representation in first world countries in comparison to third world countries almost shows that the roots of female discrimination in society go beyond wealth or poverty. Do you have an opinion on this?
Well, women are definitely underrepresented in Parliament. We have been trying to reach some 30% for some time. It goes beyond that, but I think the questions that normally come to me is, what is the issue that concerns women in entering politics? Because parliamentary entry is usually something that you strive for, you go for it. And I think that is something. Is it that women feel validated already in developed countries and therefore, you know, they're not moving forward in that area? Is it the stereotyping? Is it the discriminatory practices? I think the question that always comes to me is, why are women not running more for office as well? And if you can get the truth of that, then we can see whether improvements will come in that area. I think that's really where my mind is going with this.
And it's interesting, when you see this disparity from a parliamentary point of view, that's quite bipolar.
Yes.
But yet when we look at statistics from a business perspective,
yes,
globally,
yes,
they're all incredibly low.
Globally. They're all low. And I am not sure exactly where the limitations have been placed for that. But I think that is are women being intimidated out of it?
And part of South Africa is quite renowned in terms of its yes, quotas. And I think that, in my opinion, quotas are a good thing, because yes, that for me is the only way of being able to provide an access point and to try to level the playing field. And yes, once the playing field is level, then I absolutely believe in yes, meritocracy.
Yes.
But what are your opinions and perspectives of women empowerment and gender legislation?
Now, for gender legislation, I think we need more. I think we need enforcement. And I think we need more champions. And those are simply put of what I have been thinking for a very long time. How are we as women managing the process of, we have so many legislation. I've checked South Africa and I've checked Jamaica and international, as you know, there are so many. What is the reason? How do we have enough champions of for enforcement? Is it that we are preoccupied with our daily maneuverings of living and not being able to understand, you know, have we given up? I think those are some of the issues that constantly worry me, whether we have enough champions for the legislation. But I think we have enough. We need some more, certainly when it comes on to certain areas, for when it comes on to education, for example, health, poverty reduction, things that deal with workplace. We certainly need that. But I wonder what really do we have enough champions for enacting legislations?
And increasingly, when I've come to think about the champion side, in the past I was from a woman's point of view and having greater numbers of female champions.
Yes.
But I actually think we need to have more numbers of male champions.
We need male champions. You know, one of the best things I have done, I have met a gentleman who heads the Commonwealth Business Women's Business Group. I remember when I met him, I was very stunned. But it turns out that this gentleman is a real champion, and you can speak with him about anything concerning women's businesses, that sort of thing. The second thing, I can't remember his name now, and I apologize, but is the champion, the British, former British minister who deals with the whole issue of women in conflict. And I think a lot of that is that has shocked a lot of people, that a man is leading that charge. So I'm saying you are correct. We need a lot more male champions. I think there are a lot of men who are interested in doing this. Is there something that curbs their appetite? Is there some fear of being stigmatized? That sort of thing. But we do need more male champions of this, yes.
And when we're speaking about the types of legislation to introduce or create more of, what areas do you think we still need attention with respect to women?
Violence. We need some more violence against women. Legislation to deal with assisting women to help themselves, to develop themselves, skills training, vocational training. Those are some of the things that I think are needed to be legislated, to be able to assist women. You can't say, give lip service to certain things, because we have been doing it for many years. And so it's important that we begin to legislate that, put things in place under our agreement. We have several national policies under which you can bring those. We have the framework. But you need to have that kind of assistance, of funding, that sort of thing. I think that those are the kinds of things that we need.
And then driving, obviously, to the implementation side, because
yes,
legislation living in law and on paper is
it's,
no good
it's
unless
no
it's
good
practiced.
Unless it's enforced. And there is something that is put in place to enforce that. So mobilization for that.
Today, we're talking to Jamaican High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, Ms. Cheryl K. Spencer.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 802. Today, we're talking to the Jamaican High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, Ms. Cheryl K. Spencer. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment of the show, we spoke about legislation and the importance of it, particularly with respect to increasing the legislation to help alleviate violence against women, to focus on the implementation of legislation to try to promote gender equality on a global basis. Ms. Spencer, we are coming through to the last segment of the show. One of the questions that I ask all my guests on the program who've made tremendous achievements in their respective areas of expertise is about the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. Some speak about hard work, others talk about perseverance. In your opinion, what have been the key drivers?
It's one word comes to mind for me, and it's preparation. Working with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Jamaica is like an apprenticeship system. You start from the bottom. I think it's just in recent years that we started taking people a little further up, but you really start at the bottom. There's a process that you go through in building yourself as an officer. Then there are improvements. There are mentors. There are very good mentors. If you're blessed to meet one, then you will be able to understand that they impart the whole issue of the foreign service and how to be an excellent representative for your country. And the last is improvements in yourself. International diplomacy is very competitive. It's also a great leveler. You always meet someone brighter, with more experience and resources. I'm telling you, a place like Geneva, when you sit there, but you know that you have 30 people who are so brilliant that if you watch that, you won't speak. But guess what? You prepare yourself. And the more you prepare yourself is the more you realize it doesn't matter what the attributes of the others are. It's who you are. And you don't try to be the others either. So what you do, you prepare. One of the things about preparation is asking the right questions, which lead you to the right answers. You command respect. You find your strengths and you let others around you know that these are your strengths. It's what you call making your gift make room for you. And so for me, some of the best days I've had is sitting around the table with members of developed countries and I'm negotiating with them and I'm ahead of them. And you could see the surprise on their faces that I have what they have in front of them. Without communicating with them, I have prepared, they have come prepared. And once you are prepared, you cannot go under, you cannot be subsumed, you cannot be subordinate in any arrangement. And I think that is something that, for me, all of my life, I can tell you I read up a lot about you before I came here. And most times, even if it's a short meeting, I always go into the meeting knowing more about the person that I'm meeting, and they're usually stunned at some simple matter that I would raise that I would have found from reading, because I think that is how you let people know who you are.
you know, I'm always amazed whenever we have these conversations on seeing new lenses and new experiences that people bring to the table. And I love your expression of making your gift make room for you,
yes,
with that preparedness.
Yes.
And can you share some of the key moments in your life growing up? Because, you know, you've come from the Caribbean.
Yes.
You've gone across to Europe. You're now in Africa.
Yes. I'm from the north coast of Jamaica. It's called the Garden Parish, St. Anne. It's the coast. It's pretty much like KZN, the beach line, all the way for miles. In fact, when I go to Durban, I like to do that long drive on the promenade where it's all beach. It's the same, similar to where I'm from in Jamaica. So I grew up as a small child, very early morning beaching, Sunday mornings for sure. You know, and this is the kind of freedom. I grew up with knowing a grandfather who had 9 daughters. And yes, my grandfather on my mother's side had 9 daughters, and they were treated like queens. And so as a young woman, all of us as young grandchildren were treated similarly. So we grew up as this just knowledge of love and respect and giving from that end. The second thing was my father, who was a stickler for education, going to school, waking up very early. And he would be the one to wake you up early.
The discipline.
And making sure that you know that it's time to prepare yourself for your day, that you should not use props. So we started using the calculator when we were away from home. We could not use a calculator around him. You need to use your mind. You need to think. And this was a father who taught me, you know, how to think. The other thing that he kept saying, I don't raise you to be a follower. You have to be a leader. And so we we grew up with all of these gems. My mother, she was an awesome woman who taught me how to give, how to respect others in giving. One of the things that we always cried that when we were growing up is that we had to deliver the food, that if she promises you some dinner, we had to deliver it to you before we had our dinner. So nobody sits down to a meal until that meal has been delivered to the member of the community that is promised food for that day. So there was a certain level of respect in the giving and in the relationship. So she taught. The combination of all of that is instilling a lot of confidence, a lot of respect for other human beings, a lot of giving, being normal and natural, and also, you know, increasing the self-esteem.
But a great sense of community.
A great sense of community. I would pass, one of the things that as a child I remembered was passing another child on the road in my dress. And I would cry and say, why have you given away my beautiful dress? It's one of my favorites. And she would say, stop it. You have more than her. But she would not consult. And this is what happened to all of us. We'd find people in our dresses on the road, and we would have lost. She would bake, and we would get a tiny slice. The rest of it, or anybody, you know. It was just this kind of, and these are the things. So even now, we still gather anybody who enters, anyone we see. When Christmas comes, we gather. We look for anybody who is without and alone, and we say, come. Come and join us.
That's a beautiful spirit.
Thank you.
We are unfortunately coming right to the last part of the show.
Yes.
So can I ask you,
yes,
as our program has a broadcast and a footprint across the continent, if you could please use this platform to share a message of inspiration or words of hope to all the ladies that are listening to us today.
Yes. My, you may have listened to me and felt that it was all hunky-dory. It was not. It was just a few people and a family who, even in their time of poverty, I spoke about my grandfather, my father, they were not well-educated, but there was something about them that they wanted for their own children. So it was not all hunky-dory. What I mean is there is always something resilient that develops out of of struggles and perseverance. It's never out of ease. And so for women, I know the struggles. I've seen it all across nations. I've worked with a lot of women and young women and knowing what they go through. But never give up. Do not suffer alone. Do not suffer in silence. Work with other women, other mothers if necessary. As long as you have life, there is something in your hand. And this is what I would say. When you live to see another day as a woman, you have something in your hand to move forward. Do not give up. And in the word of a scripture in the Bible that we normally use, nothing is impossible with God.
That's a beautiful message. And really leveraging the essence of life is power.
It's power. It's how you think.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been wonderful having you here.
It has been a tremendous pleasure. I'm really happy I finally got a chance to do this program. And I really look forward to working in South Africa in the context of women and dealing with women's issues as well.
We welcome your contributions.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Jamaica's High Commissioner to the Republic of South Africa, one of 19 countries that Miss Cheryl K. Spencer oversees.